just a sulky, over bumpy, kinda hunky superhero.
Hot to fisted and electrically transistored superhero. An exotically neurotic
and aquatic superhero.
The Marvel superheroes have arrived.
Hello, welcome to Marvel Vision, a Marvel Studios television show podcast brought to you by Cinema Sanga. My name is Devin Fracci. I'm one of the hosts of the program. Joining me, as he traditionally does, is the one above all.
My name is Derek Fracci, and I don't make impressions. I literally live with people who insist I was never there. How are you, Devin?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing, one above all?
I'm good.
Folks on the Discord discovered that Derek refers to himself as the one above all.
Yep.
You did a list of your levels of friendship on the Discord.
Yes.
Can you go through it here for the folks at home?
I can't.
You can't remember it?
I don't have it open right now.
Do you remember you said that you had 10 rules for invitations?
A 10 rule. Yeah.
What's that?
It's, I don't like to do things. I'm not a fan of doing things. But I make sure that one out of every 10 times somebody invites me to something, I go to make sure they'll keep inviting me.
That's not enough times. That's not even close to enough times.
What do you mean?
That is crazy. You got to go 1 out of 4.
No, I do 1 out of 10.
1 out of 10 is not enough. Nobody's inviting you to shit anymore is my guess.
I can invite you to a lot of things.
I guess. Man, that's crazy. 1 out of 10?
Yeah.
Like, especially as you get older, people invite people to less stuff anyway.
Yes.
So that 10 could be once a year.
Sure. That's enough.
No, that's, I know, I'm not saying it's not enough. Personally, I'm saying that to continue getting invited, you have to have a little more. 1 out of 10 is not enough.
I disagree.
Oh, man. I want to hear from the folks at home, because I also am very careful about making sure that I do enough accepting of invites so that I keep getting invites, because I want to keep getting invited. I don't want to go, but I want to keep getting invited. And so
– I want to go.
What was that?
Because sometimes you do want to go.
Is your heat on or something?
Nope.
You got a very noisy background today.
There's no sound in my apartment. I just took off my headphones to check. There's nothing.
So weird. It's actually interfering with you when you start talking. I think you got to do it more often than that. Was that me doing a Star Trek The Next conversation for you?
What? All the sound stuff?
Yeah.
Constantly.
But you still listen to that show, even though they continuously do that, and you hate it.
Yes, and so does Matt Myra, one of the hosts, who gets very annoyed by it every time. And keeps trying to get the other host to get through the bullshit so they can just get to the episode. Yeah.
That sounds better now.
Yeah, maybe it was on your end.
No, it was definitely on your end, because I could tell it was yours, because you have a mic. You pause your – you know what it is? I know what it is. You mute your mic too much. And when you unmute your mic picks up every single sound, and it takes a second to readjust itself. And then if you begin talking immediately after you unmute, it doesn't pick up the first syllable of what you're saying. That's, I think, what it is. You're really – you love muting. You mute like whenever you're not talking. Which is what's happening right now, I'm assuming.
No, I'm not muted.
You're just quiet.
I'm so fucking bored by this conversation.
But you're a big muter.
Yes.
How come? What's the philosophy behind all the muting?
Because I'm clearing my throat, or I'm cracking my knuckles or whatever. And then I know if I'm doing that, you're going to be like, oh, don't do that, while you fucking yawn and sneeze and cough into the microphone every 2 seconds.
We're having a spicy one this week.
But you're coming at me.
I'm coming at you.
Before we even started, you were coming at me. Did you click the thing?
No, it's funny. There's always a thing you click every episode when I say, okay, let's do this, and then we start recording. There's always a click that you do after it starts recording every single time. It's very funny to me because it happens every single time.
And the only person that says anything about it is you. Meanwhile, on the Discord and stuff, people constantly talk about you coughing or yawning, and you don't stop doing that. That's not a problem. It's only if I do it. It's well, a problem.
It's ableism to complain about that because I can't help myself. Okay. So it's ableism.
Okay. And help yourself.
No, now you talk about yawning and I want to yawn now. It makes me want to. I'm psychologically triggered to yawn. You and
Matt Myra. He does it too.
Does he yawn too?
Yes.
Oh, man. It's because I'm not breathing right. I mean, that's honestly what it is. Because I'm talking and I'm not breathing correctly. And so it creates yawning because I don't have enough oxygen. That's honestly what it is. That's 100% what it is. I'm not a trained broadcaster. So I don't have my breathing patterns proper. And I talk more than you do on this podcast because I do all the recap stuff. So yes. I am like talking out of breath. And then I get very worried about dead space. So I don't like to like pause
for too long. Is that why you talk constantly?
Oh, man. Just fucking. You know who's going to be excited about this? It's going to be Tom in the comments is going to be very excited about this. Yes. About you roasting me yet again.
Yep.
Man, you know, speaking of roasting.
You are a talker. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. That's why that's. This podcast would be very quiet without you. Let's be honest. It would be 12 seconds. It'd be me being like, I watched the episode. It was fine. And then that would be the end of it. So,
speaking of roasting, this is off topic, but I've been listening to the It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia podcast where the three main guys record a podcast. Good. They watch old episodes of their own show and talk about it. Well, they sort of talk about it. And what I've noticed listening to a lot of the episodes now is that it is very often Rob and Charlie just ganging up on Glenn.
Yes.
Like semi-consistently, like just endless, but like very subtly. They don't come at him really hard. Yeah. It'll be like, oh, is this season, were you eating this season or not eating this season? And he's like, no, I was just doing the master cleanse. And it's like very, very funny. I like when there's roasting on a podcast. I really do enjoy that.
There's a thing that becomes clearer and clearer as I listen to that podcast is that Glenn either is oblivious to the fact that they're goofing on him or he's down for it. He doesn't care. One or the other. I can't tell which. I'm not sure. Rob gets very quiet if they roast him.
He does not like it. No, he doesn't like it.
He's not good with it.
Charlie likes to do it a little bit because Charlie knows him really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, the three of them know each other so very well. So very well.
Yeah.
You know, and then nobody roasts Charlie because, as they say multiple times on the podcast, everyone loves Charlie. Right. Like, there's nothing to roast. Everyone just loves him and everything he does.
Right.
So they can't do anything to like roast him, which is fun. You know. And none of them roast Meg. I don't know if you've gotten to the point where Meg really becomes part of the show or not.
She's like Googling for them.
Okay. They get her a mic at some point and she becomes much bigger part of the show.
They figured out a way around the middle-aged men Googling things by having a producer doing the Googling for them.
I believe she's a millennial Googling things for them. Yeah.
This is a little bit more on topic, but still not really on topic. Six episodes into X-Men 97, I've decided that a Legion of Superheroes cartoon done exactly like this show would be the greatest thing that ever happened.
Sure.
Like just the way that this show, I think, has shown that you can do a legitimate team story and that characters can get space.
Yeah.
I think is not always the case with these kinds of cartoons. Sometimes certain characters just always come to the fore. I mean, with the original X-Men cartoon, it was Wolverine who was just like,
I would point to Justice League Unlimited as how a Legion of Superheroes show could work. Because that was a team of 40 superheroes, and every episode they focused on 2 to 3 of them, you know, and you'd see the other ones in the background, and there were like ongoing stories with them that you would catch up with throughout the episodes. But like, it would be like, on this mission, it's Supergirl, Green Arrow, and, you know, Hawkman or whatever. And they go do something, and then the next episode, it's Flash and and Martian Manhunter, and you know,
I don't like that.
That's the only way to do Legion. There's like 40 characters in Legion. You don't do
40 character Legion cartoon.
You're not doing Legion.
Yeah, you are.
You're not. That's what the Legion is. It's a giant team. That's what makes them really stand out.
yeah, you still have a lot of, you can have a lot of characters or whatever, but you need a core team. And the other thing is that if you're just doing two characters running off on an adventure, you're not doing the soap opera, which is what X-Men 97 is fucking nailing. And Legion needs
that. You said you continue to catch up with these characters and follow their lives on Justice League Unlimited.
Nah, it's not the same though. You can't like go like four episodes without a character. Like you got to have the characters that got to be like running the whole thing. I think that, and they need to be doing stuff together as much as possible. They can have episodes apart, but as much as possible, it needs to be together. And I think that X-Men 97 is just nailing it. This week especially, I was like, oh, this is 100%. This should be a Legion. I mean, part of it's because Imperial Guard shows up and Dave Cockrum based them on Legion of Superheroes. That put it in my mind. But like, it just, this format, like where it's very heavily soap opera up front, and a lot of the stories are motivated by soap opera as opposed to being motivated by rando villains or whatever. That I think is the ideal Legion cartoon, where it's their lives most of the time, as opposed to just like, oh, we're patrolling Sector 75. Like the Clone Wars thing, that would be Clone Wars, right? And that's fine. That's a good setup, you know, like that's what Justice League Unlimited is like, I guess, like Clone Wars. Like you can have storylines with certain Jedi or whatever, but it's just not the same thing as this, because Clone Wars doesn't have that deep soap opera.
That's not what Unlimited is.
And I want that soap opera element very badly. Unlimited,
every episode of Unlimited has one of the big seven, at least one of the big seven in it. So that you're constantly seeing what they're up to. They're the main characters and the other ones are, they have side stories, you know, like there's a Supergirl side story. There's a Green Arrow side story. Like they have their side stories, but the big seven are still the focus, you know, is how it works on Unlimited.
I mean, I could even see it like X-Men 97 in terms of like you have the main team and then you have a bunch of other Legionnaires who are just doing shit. And then they like on X-Men, like where all of a sudden a mutant shows up and they've been having a life outside of the cartoon. And then so all of a sudden Matter Eater Lad shows up and he's like, well, I've been doing this, you know, and like you don't even need to keep up with him necessarily. He can come and go every now and again, like the Morlocks do or whatever. I don't know. I just was watching this week and I was just like, man, I really want a fucking Legion of Superheroes cartoon. I don't want a live action one.
No, I don't think they would work in live action.
Yeah, I just don't want a live action one.
I mean, if they were to do live action, you'd have to convince the Wachowskis to work together again. I think they're the only people that could do Legion well in live action.
But
or at least make it something bombastic and wild. Like really go all out with it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, but again, I just care about the soap opera. I don't care about the bomb. I like the bombastic and wild as the background for soap opera.
Sure.
I don't want it to be the front and center thing. That's not what I care about with Legion. What I care about is the individual characters and their relationships.
No, I agree. But I'm saying like, if you were going to do a movie, you're not going to do the soap opera stuff in a movie, right? That's just not going
to work. I don't think you should do a movie. I mean, if you're going to go live action, you have to do a TV show. You can't do a Legion movie as far as I'm concerned. I mean, maybe somebody will do it, but like, I don't believe you can. I would like to be proven wrong, but
I think you end up with like the X-Men movies where they constantly hint that they're soap opera stuff, but they never really do anything with them.
Well, like in the X-Men movies, there's like one or two characters who have romance and that's it.
Yeah.
But like in Legion, we got to have a lot of characters bouncing off each other. Like that's the thing. And that's also what this cartoon understands. There's a lot of characters with their own romantic and interpersonal things playing.
Yes.
So, yeah. Anyway, that's just something I was thinking about all day today after I did my second viewing of this episode. I was like, fuck, I want a Legion of Superheroes cartoon. And I wouldn't even mind it being essentially the same art style as this, frankly. Like, I wouldn't even complain about that. So, anyway, do we have news about comic book movie TV stuff?
We do. Marvel Studios had a small round of layoffs. They let go of 15 people this week.
It's too bad.
And that's rough. It's rough times.
Sad to hear it. Sorry to hear it.
Yeah. There's also a bit of controversy in the Marvel Universe this week when Cody Ziegler, a writer for Marvel Comics, for Miles Morales, said that it was Kevin Feige who said that they had to kill Ms. Marvel and make her a mutant.
I don't understand. And Marvel
came out and was like, no, that's not what happened at all.
I don't understand because this was common knowledge. This was not new information.
Although Marvel denies it now.
Marvel, no. Marvel says it was a decision that was made. It was a decision that was made on all levels. It was how Marvel's thing is. I actually don't think he probably wanted to kill her. I think he said make her a mutant. I can't imagine that he said kill her. They probably said, you know what we'll do? We'll kill her. It'll be a great one shot. We'll make a lot of money on that one shot. I imagine was editorial. I don't know why he would say kill her. That doesn't make any sense from the MCU perspective.
No.
But the fact that Feige wanted her to be a mutant is well known. And this was, I had heard, I think it's even in the fucking MCU book, that it was like the one time he ever pushed his ability to tell comics what to do. It was this one thing.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand 100% why it's like such a big deal now. I think it might be because on the internet, nobody remembers anything.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, thing that was like kind of common knowledge a year ago is now brand new and shocking and upsetting.
Yes.
I think.
Sure. I mean, it's the law of social media is that we can only discuss like five or six things endlessly.
Right.
And maybe every now and then something gets dropped out and then something new comes in. So right now we're testing to see if the death of Kamala Khan will be the new thing that gets dropped in that we'll discuss every 4 months.
I mean, look, the deal is this, is that the death of Kamala Khan was bad. It was badly done. It was a bad story. It was a bad idea, frankly. Every piece of it was bad. And I'm not a fan of it. And I am a fan of her becoming a mutant. That's fine. I have no problem with that. I think that's great. That's what she was meant to be until such time as Ike said, no more mutants. Make everybody fucking inhuman. So I have no problem with that. I think that the death was stupid. I think the way the death was handled was stupid. The fact that it happened in a Spider-Man book and like all this other shit, like it's all very bad. But the premise that Feige said, make her a mutant, I just don't. I mean, again, I guess people are now saying he said killer, but I don't believe that he said killer. I legitimately don't believe that. Because I don't understand why the MCU would want that.
I agree. I think he was like, hey, can we make her a mutant? And somebody like in Marvel Comics was like, well, we got the whole thing going on with the X-Men where they can resurrect mutants, right? So if we have her die, they can resurrect her. You know, and then that's how we explain that she's a mutant or whatever.
Which is how they did it. And so the other thing is that this also, being mad at this also requires a true, I mean, just like a purposeful misunderstanding of how comic books work.
I mean, it goes back to the Hell Hydra issue.
Yeah, exactly. So people just don't know how these fucking stories work. And they always work this way. They always work this way. It's not like every now and again, every time they work this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold on. Hold on.
Uh-oh.
Hey, shut up. You know what? It's springtime. And so he's screeching out the window all day.
Sure.
The cat. He's screeching out the window. And I can't get him to stop. I don't know how to. How do you make a cat stop screeching out the window?
I don't know.
The thing is, he's fixed, so he's screeching out the window at, like, lady cats, I'm guessing. Maybe guy cats. I don't know. What do I know about this guy's deal, right? But he has no balls.
So?
So what are you going to do about it, buddy? Shut up. he's talking a big game. That's all I'm saying.
Still have some fun.
So all he's talking a big fucking game. His mouth is writing checks that his balls cannot cash because his balls don't exist anymore.
They have rotted away or probably were incinerated.
Probably incinerated. I would guess that they throw them in a little medical bag and then toss them in an incinerator. That's my guess. Yeah. A long time ago. Anyway, so sorry about the cat screeching in the background. But yeah, so this whole thing is silly. I don't understand.
Either way, this is coming after complaining that I mute my microphone too often. We stopped so you could talk about your cat screaming.
He was screaming while I was talking.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know.
I thought you did what you usually do, which is pause and then be like, oh, no, we'll be in there. I didn't. Sound perfect.
I didn't pause this time. No, I didn't pause. Because I knew I was just going to yell at him real quick. Because sometimes what happens, here's the funny thing about this cat. This cat, I think, might have some kind of, I think he's neurodivergent, right? I think he's got some kind of OCD thing. Because he'll get into a behavior and then he won't stop until you say something to snap him out of it. Sure. So he'll make biscuits.
Yeah.
You know how cats make biscuits, right?
Yeah.
And he'll just do it. And he will not stop, like, ever. And then he'll just be staring into space making biscuits. And then you'll have to like say something or move in such a way that you break the spell. He'll also do that in the – he'll do that when he screams out the window. He'll scream out the window until you just say, hey, stop. And then he'll just stop. Like he'll just be snapped out of it. And he does it in the litter box where he'll scratch at the litter box forever if you don't say to him, cut it out. Then he just stops. And like you don't have to yell. All I have to do is just like raise my voice enough to be heard in the next room, and that breaks the spell.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound like he's got something wrong with him, right?
No, sounds like a cat.
You think so? He's just like zones in and that's it?
Yeah. I think they just do shit. They're awake for like 4 hours a day, and that's a lot of time for them to fill.
He is working it down to about two a day. This guy has it like locked down. Do you know what the big problem is? Is that I'll lay down, and then I probably talked about this on the show before, and then he'll lay down between my legs.
Yeah.
And then I can't move.
Oh, wow.
And that's it. I'm just stuck. I'm just trapped. I can't move because he's laying on me. And then what he'll do is he'll put his little head on my foot sometimes. And that's too cute. You can't be like, get off me. You have to go, oh, this is so sweet.
You can go, hey,
I got things to do. No, you can't. You know what? He's always done this. And he's also very picky. Like if he's sitting on you and you adjust, he'll get like irritated and he will jump off the thing and go. And the way that Brittany always did it, she would do his little voice. She would like have to adjust. And then he would get up and jump off the bed or whatever. And then she would do his little voice and go, fuck you. You ruined it, you bitch. You ruined it. That's how she'd always do it. And he has that look on his face, big time, like accusatory, like how fucking dare you move right now? Which is like actually worse for me. Like if he just looked at me sadly, like, oh no, I want to stay with you. I think I could deal with that. But it's the accuser. How dare you? That makes it so hard for me.
Well, there you go.
All right. What do we got? What else we got? What's next?
Word on the street is that Natalia Tena is going to be in Deadpool Wolverine. You might know her from the Harry Potter movies or from Game of Thrones.
Wasn't she already cast for one of these movies?
There was rumors a month ago that she had filmed some stuff, but nobody knew what it was for.
Okay.
And now apparently she is a X-23 variant.
Good for her.
Yep. So there you go.
Good for her. What a waste of a use of her.
I guess.
They do a lot of that with Marvel, you know?
Yeah.
This week, everybody found out who Walton Goggins is, and they all love Walton Goggins now.
Did they just find out? I feel like this is another one where everyone finds out every couple of months.
I mean, maybe. I don't know. The Walton Goggins, there was a guy who was like, I've been trying to tell people ever since Righteous Gemstone started, you got to watch this Walton Goggins guy. I was like, brother, where have you been? I mean, like, give me a break.
He was one of the main stars in a Quentin Tarantino movie many years ago. You might remember. He was on TV long before that on a hit show.
He was on The Shield for years. Yeah. I mean, like, among other things. Like, so, like, I mean, it's, like, very funny. It's very funny to – but
he also had a sitcom that I greatly enjoyed. It only lasted two seasons called The Unicorn.
I've never even heard of it.
No? No. I believe it was created by Peyton Reed, actually. And it's about a guy who is a widower who is trying to get back out there and date.
Wow.
And that is Walton Goggins. And the idea is that he's a unicorn because he is somebody who women know can be in a stable relationship because he was married and whatnot.
That's how I feel. I feel that way. I feel like on some level, like being a widower is probably like a big green flag.
Yeah.
Like I was in a stable relationship and I was not just that, but I stuck it out to the end.
Yeah.
Like I was there. I was there the whole way.
Yeah. It was a good show. I really enjoyed that show. I thought it was very funny.
But the point of this really is that cast. Speaking of Peyton Reed put him in Ant-Man and the Wasp in a minor role, and people are like, why did they waste him in the MCU? And it was like, I don't know that they wasted him in the MCU so much as that Walton Goggins has for a long time been a character actor. And I don't know 100% like what other role he would have in the MCU.
He's still a character actor, isn't he? I mean,
I think Fallout's doing a big thing for him.
Sure, but Fallout he's running around in crazy makeup, right? So, he's all.
I'm taking it that you haven't
Red Skull looking.
You haven't watched it.
I watched the first episode.
I like it.
Do you? I thought it was okay.
I like it. I mean, I don't love it, but I like it. I did not think I was going to like it. And I was really surprised because having watched Westworld, I thought there was no way that these people could possibly make it funny.
Yeah.
There's no way. I was like, this is not a chance, because Westworld was just not funny. Like, and it was just too self-serious. And that's what the big problem with that show was that it disappeared up its own ass over the course of a couple of seasons. And but it actually has the totally correct tone.
Okay.
I don't like Fallout very much. I don't really enjoy those games all that much. I find the entire environment to be really exhausting.
Okay.
I just can't – how many bombed out houses can I go pick up plates in? I mean, sure. It's a certain point where I'm like, all right, I get it. But I think that this show is really, really, really working. I've seen three episodes out of all the ones that have dropped, and I really like it. And Goggins is really, really, really good.
I want to note real quick, Peyton Reed was an executive producer on The Unicorn. He was not the creator.
There we go. And I mean, Peyton, by the way, is in with a lot of great comedy guys. Like, he's in with the Tim and Eric guys. That's why they're in the fucking Ant-Man movies.
Okay.
You know? Yeah. So, but also like the cinema on cinema on cinema on cinema at the cinema. He's good buddies with those guys too.
There you go.
He works with all those guys. You know, he started doing really cool music videos for bands like Superchunk.
Yes. And the Donnas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't get the respect he deserves.
No, no. He's very quiet. He's not, he doesn't seem to jump out there and be like, look at me. I'm the director. I made something great.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of great stuff.
He's made a lot of really great stuff, and he doesn't get half of the recognition that he should. He has really, really great taste. I mean, so, you know, I mean, but like, it's the stuff that he's directed, like, not just like his like superhero stuff, but like fucking like Bring It On is like an all timer.
Bring It On is great.
And that I honestly believe that Down With Love should be on the Criterion Collection.
Down With Love is great. I like The Breakup.
Breakup is good. Yes Man, I don't love. I got to tell you, not a Yes Man guy.
You know what? Yes Man has songs created for it by Eels.
Oh, so you know I love it. You are a Yes Man guy.
Yeah. And that also led to Jim Carrey doing a song with Eels.
There you go.
So I love that. And then, of course, E from Eels showed up in Quantumania. So it all works out.
There you go.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah. But Bring It On, I greatly enjoyed.
Love Bring It On.
Apparently, I didn't know he worked on Mr. Show as well. So mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah, no, he's a very cool dude. Anyway.
In Back to the Future, he directed the live action sequences for the Back to the Future animated series.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
I think it's like one of his very first Hollywood jobs, yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's right. I know. He's done really cool stuff. I know. Anyway, where were we? Oh, we're talking about Natalie Tenya, who I like very much, by the way.
She's very good.
I had a big crush on her in the Harry Potter movies. Yeah. She was of age, by the way.
Yes.
I know,
yes. She was one of the
teachers.
No, she's not a teacher.
Oh, she's like one of the rebels. She's the Phoenix. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, she's part of that crew.
But she's a grown-up, basically, is the important piece here. When you say that somebody, you have a crush on somebody from Harry Potter and you're my age, that could sound
very clear. You got to be very, very clear what you're talking about.
Although now I can have crushes on any of them.
I suppose.
They're all old now.
Yeah.
They're all like deep into their 30s.
Yep.
It's weird. It's totally crazy.
It's very weird.
They're all deep into their 30s and they all hate J.K. Rowling.
They do. Daniel Radcliffe said they'd be like, now I got to write a goddamn 2-page thing because she randomly said that she wouldn't forgive me for something I didn't do. Like,
Jesus. So funny. All right. What else we got?
We have our Ma and Pa Kent have been cast. Ma is going to be played by Neva Howell, who I don't think I've ever seen in anything.
Yeah.
And Pa is Pruitt Taylor Vince. And there you go.
So, top comment on the internet, Snyder guy on Twitter saying, Zack Snyder casts a hot woman as Ma Kent. James Gunn casts grandma. I don't mind Zack's Ma Kent. Like, you know, that's fine. But like, I don't think that like Ma Kent should be hot, like as a matter of like, just like general.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind that like Aunt May was hot in the MCU. Like, that's okay. But I don't think that we should all now move on with the idea that Aunt May is totally fuckable. That just should not be what we're like. That's not the assumption we're operating under moving forward. So I think that James Gunn casting these folks is fine. And I'm very excited about it. And the fact that they're not big names indicates they're not going to be in it. The fact that they weren't in the table read indicates they're barely going to be in it.
Yes.
And that's what I want too. I don't want a ton of fucking Ma and Pa Kent.
Yes. Did you see the secret Ma and Pa Kent movie?
No.
Let Him Go with
Ryan
and Kevin Costner?
Yeah, I did not see it.
That movie's awesome.
Oh, they Ma and Pa Kent?
So good. I mean, they're farmers in Kansas. And he's a retired sheriff in like the South.
Okay.
And it's basically a Western, like their granddaughter gets kidnapped and they go and get her back. And it's Montana, I guess. So it's not even the South, but like, right. It's
everything in your first sentence was wrong.
Yeah. It's a very good movie though. It's really good. It gets real crazy. I was not prepared for how wild it gets. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Maybe one time I will watch it.
It is very good. It's very, very good.
That's
our Ma and Pa Kent. And then finally, Peacemaker season 2 has started filming.
Yes.
So there you go.
There is some other rumors. One is that Sydney Sweeney has met with Kevin Feige about the MCU.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't really mean anything, but
Grant Gustin is texting with James Gunn. It's meaningless.
The thing is that's not super meaningless because Kevin Feige definitely would like to get her in the MCU because she's a big fucking deal.
But I would think
Grant Gustin is not.
No, he's not. But I would think right now her being in Madam Web is like, well, now.
No, I don't. That's the whole point of why this is an interesting rumor. It doesn't matter to them, they don't care. That's the whole point of why this is an interesting rumor. Like, it's like they're meeting and they're probably trying to see, like, what are you interested in doing? Like, what, how do you feel? And then from there, working towards something. I mean, maybe not. Like, they meet with all kinds of people. I know a ton of people who've met with Marvel and then it went nowhere.
Yes.
But the fact that he's meeting with her, and I do believe he's meeting with her, one indicates that they don't care about the Madam Web shit.
What if he met with her? He's like, I need to explain to you the difference between Sony and Marvel. Because all of you goofers went off and made this movie thinking you were part of the Marvel thing, and you're not.
Right.
Stop it.
Right.
Spread the word out to everybody.
But I would like to see her in the MCU. I like Sydney Sweeney. I'm pro Sydney Sweeney. I'm all for hot ladies. I got nothing against them.
I don't know if we discussed this when I talked about seeing Immaculate, but I thought she was very good in that. And that was the first thing I've seen her in where I'm like, oh, she is a good actor. But in fairness to her, the only other thing I've really seen her in is when she was on that hotel show on HBO, which she had a very small part in, and Madam Web. So maybe not the best to judge her on, but in Immaculate, I thought she did a really good job.
Rumors have it that Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daley are in the mix for the Spider-Man 4 director spot. They wrote Homecoming. Not a bad choice. Not a bad choice. This is such a tough one because, again, we've talked about this before. They're going to shoot this fall, and they have a script and everything, and they're just going to bring in some guy to shoot it. And it's not great. That's not a great scenario. But I guess people like that who have been involved are a good choice, and they're also good filmmakers. I think both of us, we did a whole episode about Dungeons and Dragons, and we quite loved it.
Dungeons and Dragons Game Night is, I've consistently said, one of the best comedies of like the modern times.
Yeah.
I love that movie very, very much. I did not like their Vacation so much. That I was not big on.
Yeah, it didn't really 100% work, but.
No, but what are you going to do? But I enjoy them very much, so I would be down for them to do Spider-Man. It would be weird to me that they come on to do Spider-Man and it's somebody else's script because they seem to write their own stuff, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, but what are their last two movies? Oh, so it's Game Night, Dungeon. What was before Dungeons and Dragons? Was it Vacation before Dungeons and Dragons?
I think it was Vacation.
Yeah, so maybe they're just happy to come and make a movie that's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Everybody likes Dungeons and Dragons. It just didn't make any money.
No, it just did not.
That's the problem with that one. Like, Vacation isn't that good. Like, it was a whiff. But Dungeons and Dragons was terrific. It just didn't make money.
Dungeons and Dragons is my favorite kind of movie.
Yeah.
Which is when it hit streaming and everyone goes, why didn't anyone tell me this was so good?
And we like, motherfucker.
I was screaming at you, sons of bitches.
We did a 3.5-hour podcast about it. So the other pieces of random gossip, Norrin Radd is going to be in the Fantastic Four movie, but he may not be the Silver Surfer, which is something we discussed on this very program, the idea of just swapping the roles, because the Silver Surfer in this movie is going to be his girlfriend in the comics.
Yeah.
And so now, instead of him sacrificing himself to save her, she's going to be sacrificing herself to save him. And because this is going to take place in an alternate universe, we can still have a Silver Surfer in the MCU, and it can even be the same actor.
Oh, good. Thank goodness. It'd be very hard for me to accept the idea of a female Silver Surfer.
But I'm saying we can have both. Like, maybe this female Silver Surfer comes with the Fantastic Four into our universe. Who knows? A lot of rumors about Blade. One of which is that the movie that Ryan Coogler is making is potentially influenced by early versions of Blade. Because he's making a vampire movie set in the South, in the 20s or something like that. Yeah. And that was the original Blade concept. But now that's not the case anymore. It is now taking place in the present day.
Yep.
Which I think is smart. I don't know why you would want to set it back then.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. That makes no sense.
I mean, I wouldn't mind it in the 70s because Blade's a very 70s character.
Sure.
But I don't know why you'd want to set it back at the turn of the 20th century. It doesn't really make
sense. I wouldn't mind. I could go without Marvel doing stories that take place in the past. I'm fine with them just in current day stuff. That's fine. You know? Because every time they go to the past, they seem to just screw things up.
Yeah, well, that's how it always is in comics too, right? I mean,
yes. Yeah. Yeah.
We got the official log line of the X-Men movie.
Yeah, it's a bunch of people hanging out with mutant powers, and everyone's afraid of them.
Charles Xavier's team of merry mutants is charged with the mission of protecting a world that hates and fears them for their unusual appearances and abilities.
Oh, boy.
Now, that's just a log line they threw in there. It doesn't even mean that's what the movie's actually even about. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, because the question is, what is the mutant status quo in the MCU? Yeah. And who even knows?
Are they going to be in the MCU?
Yeah, there's a whole lot.
It's going to be like Fantastic Four, where they're off in their own reality.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff in here that, you know, who even knows? Vision Quest is shooting this October.
Ooh.
And it's going to have the kids, Viv and Vin from the comic, not the other kids that Scarlet Witch made, but other kids.
And this is the kind of thing that makes me like, Marvel, you got to choose. You got to choose a lane, Marvel and Disney. You can't keep saying like, hey, we're cutting back on stuff. We've made too much. We understand. We got to cut back. By the way, we're doing 30 more things.
But that's actually not crazy because they need to have more TV shows. Let's say they do 4 TV shows a year, right? That's not crazy, right? That's not nuts.
That's a lot. Their whole thing is like 4 movies and 4 TV shows was too much. Like we were doing too much.
They weren't going to
have overflooding the market.
They weren't going to have 2 movies. Even 2 movies, 2 TV shows. If the premise is to stick with characters who are proven, then Vision and Scarlet Witch are proven characters. And WandaVision was a big hit. So it just makes perfect sense. It makes nothing but sense. I don't, you know. I know that they're not your favorite characters or your favorite story, but everybody knows them.
Everyone knows them, but is anyone sitting there being like, I can't wait to find out what Vision's been up to?
No, but
I don't think so.
I don't know that anybody was like, I can't wait to see Vision and Wanda trapped in a TV. And that was
I think the draw there was Wanda.
Well, she's going to be in this too.
Is she?
Yeah, she's on the cast list. That's going around to production offices. So, I mean, that may or may not be the case, but currently that's the plan anyway. So, Michael Douglas asked to be killed in Quantumania.
Yes.
Probably should have been.
Yeah, it would have been useful if Kang killed somebody to show power, like to show danger.
It's tough because – so the thing about it is that he – so in Edgar Wright's original Ant-Man, he dies at the end. So he actually signed on to do a movie, I believe, where he died at the end and he showed up in 2 more sequels. So
and cartoons. He's
and doing cartoons. Movies, right? Yeah. I didn't like how Edgar had it. It was sort of like a – almost like a – the edit was almost a gag because it was like a slam cut to his funeral and there's a bunch of ants carrying his casket.
Okay.
Which I don't mind that, but like the way it was in the script, I just didn't love it. And I was also like, but I don't want to kill this character. Like, this is a good character. Keep him around. Why kill him? And I understand the desire to kill him and add a little bit of weight to Quantumania, which people complain that movie doesn't have weight emotionally. But also, I think that he gets his coolest moment in Quantumania and with his aunts.
Yes.
That are hyper intelligent and evolved. It's like so cool. Like,
no,
it's
I agree.
Like,
I agree.
Like, that movie's so cool, and everybody just ignores all the really cool shit in it. There's like a whole fucking communist ant society that evolves during the course of the movie. It's incredible.
Here's the thing. I thought about that.
Yeah.
And this is how taking in his thing of like, please kill me, how I think I would have handled that.
Is how would you have done it?
He shows up at the end with those ants. They're fighting. He gets killed. Because again, it's not even so much an emotional thing, although I think it would be emotional. But if you're setting up Kang to be the big threat for the next stages of the MCU, he needs to kill a recognizable character to show that he's threatening. That's my opinion. So you have him kill Hank. Done, right? Oh, Hank, you know, Michael Douglas gets what he wants. We've set up Kang as like a serious threat. Here you go. Then when the fight is over and he's there dead, those super like intelligent ants, they come up and they start talking and they're like, he was the one. He, without him, we do not exist. We will take him back to our land. And like they take him to like their ant reality that like where they created their society. And then later on, you could have him come back if you want as an ant.
You could. Now, the other thing though, I think about the problem with killing him in that movie is that I think I'm alone on this. Maybe you agree with me. I love the ending of Quantumania, which is the premise that we won. Everything's great. And then Scott realizes, wait, maybe it's not great. Like maybe
that guy said there were worse things coming than him and whatnot. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, maybe actually I fucked up. Like maybe I didn't win the day. And I think when you have a guy die, it's hard to have that same, like, I'm walking down the street happy.
I agree.
I love that ending. Actually, the other thing is, oh, nobody else does. So maybe it's better if the ending wouldn't have been in the movie because nobody else liked it.
I greatly enjoyed that ending that he's like, well, I did it. It's great, right? Things are great, right? Oh my God. Like, I enjoyed that.
But nobody else did. So maybe it would have been better just to not have that happen.
Sure.
Oh boy.
Well, that's okay, because in like 7 years, everyone's gonna be like, "Quantumania is the best Marvel movie."
and then Captain America 4 McDonald's Happy Meal toys leaked.
Yeah, I sent you that.
I know, that's why I'm talking about it. I don't know why you didn't bring it up since you sent it to me. I was very confused by that.
Because it's a leak thing. I mean, I don't know how much we want to talk about leak stuff.
I don't know what you mean by a leak thing, because it just looks like somebody took a picture of a menu board. I don't know where this is. I don't know what the deal is.
It's Brazilian, and it's not available yet. So it's somebody who, like, that's one thing is I can't be sure it's real, because it's just drawings of the toys. It's not actually the toys. And I would imagine the toys are going to be quite a way off, because the movie
is. I don't think so. Yet. So this is why it's interesting, because the movie was supposed to be coming out, and I think that again we've actually discussed this on the show before that sometimes they do
with the Marvels.
Yeah. Sometimes these things just get fucking. They're just locked in, and you can't change it.
Yeah.
And so that's what's interesting about this is that it is technically a leak, but it's a leak because the whole fucking thing fell apart. And this might have just shown up at somebody's fucking McDonald's. Like this might have just shown up at their McDonald's because like it was this whole system that's automatically printing this stuff.
Yeah.
So I don't really know. It looks like, but the way that it looks, that this person that posted this picture makes it seem like this is actually going to be in Brazilian McDonald's in a couple of weeks.
Maybe.
Anyway, we got the new Falcon. We got the couple of new Sam Captain Americas. We got a Red Hulk.
Yep.
Then we have Ruth.
Yep.
Who is Sabra.
Just Ruth.
Now she's just Ruth, though. She was Sabra. In the comics, Sabra is an Israeli superhero, but they've taken that away. Now she's just Ruth. I honestly don't even understand why they're even keeping that name. Just call her Joan, because people are going to complain about it, the fact that she has the same name as that character from the comics, like the same real-world name, you know? And then there's Cascavel, which is apparently, I guess, a translation of Diamondback. Who's in the Serpent Society, but now I keep hearing the Serpent Society is not in the fucking movie anymore. So yeah. I honestly don't know what's happening. These might be all toys that have nothing to do with the actual movie. It'd be amazing
if there was a Diamondback toy and she's not in the movie.
I mean, the thing is, the way these systems work, if they cut her out of the movie, then yeah, that would happen.
Yep.
There's a character that got cut out of Force Awakens, and he had like, he was like part of the first wave of Force Awakens toys. And I mean, like, he was already like a background character.
Yeah.
One of those characters who only gets a name in the toys. He doesn't have a name in the movies.
Yeah.
But he was on every fucking store shelf, and he's not even in the movie. So
I wonder if McDonald's could end up suing Disney over this stuff in the same way that Activision sued Paramount for the handling of Star Trek. In that,
well, I don't know.
For those that don't know, Activision in the early 2000s sued Paramount, saying that they had bungled Star Trek movies and TV shows so badly that the games were no longer selling well, that they could not sell games based on the license that they paid for. And so they sued Paramount and they settled out of court. And with something like this, can McDonald's be like, hey, we paid you to have these figures in our Happy Meals, and the idea was that the movies would be out and the kids would want the toys. The movies aren't out. We got these toys. You screwed us.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is. I don't know, like, I might be being naive here, but, like, in the modern day, does Disney pay McDonald's to put the toys in the Happy Meal? Like, is this an advertising thing as opposed to a licensed thing? Like, how much value does this add McDonald's? McDonald's barely does Happy Meal toys anymore.
No, they still do them.
But they don't do them like they used to. They don't do them like they used to. And, like, it used to be every time a movie came out, there was some cool Happy Meal or glass tie-in. And they don't do that anymore.
I miss the glasses, that's for sure. The glasses were so cool.
No, I think they're very cool.
The ones for, like, Batman Forever? They were so cool.
They were great. And, I mean, the last ones I can remember are the J.J. Abrams Star Trek.
Yeah.
Burger King did those. There might have been something else since then. That was a big thing that we spearheaded back when I was at Draft House, was, like, doing the pint glasses, because we all love those as kids. And there was a lot of trepidation. It's like, we don't know, this is not like a thing we usually do, and it's a fucking blockbuster thing. Like, people love it, and, you know, it's a whole market now.
Yeah.
Like, cool old-fashioned looking glasses that tie into,
that aren't done with lead paint, so you can actually use them if you want to.
Believe me, I'm still using my lead. I got a whole fucking collection of Empire Strikes Back glasses that are slowly killing me.
For Christmas, I got Shane some, like, I think they're Return of the Jedi glasses. And I was like, you can't use them. They've lead paint. Please don't drink from them.
I mean, like,
I don't want you laid in your deathbed in, like, 10 years. Be like, you fucking murdered me.
Listen, you want to know why I make weird noises on the mic? It's because I'm fucking dying of lead poisoning as we speak. My brain is rotting away in my skull.
Yep.
But anyway, I'm fascinated by this. And I am curious if Diamondback is actually in the motion picture. And also, I'm curious if the Red Hulk is as red as this, because Red Hulk here is, like,
very red.
He is, like, radioactive neon red. He is like in a cartoon when somebody slams a hammer on their hand, like, he's that color red. It's something else. It's really oof. They're kind of like semi Funko Pop looking.
Yeah, they look lame.
They're Happy Meal.
They're all like keychains, right, or something.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I think all the things that Happy Meal toys aren't even cool anymore. They're just like keychains or like, yeah. They did a whole round of McNugget characters that actually people were collecting.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
But they don't do a ton of cool Happy Meal toys anymore, says the 50-year-old man. I can't believe that I can't get a cool toy at my Happy Meal when I get an apple slice alongside my little cheeseburger.
Where's my chocolate milk? I'm looking up Happy Meal toys to see what the most recent ones have been.
All right. I think that's the most of the actual interesting.
Well, there's another rumor.
What's going that?
Around, if you want to discuss it.
Sure, why not?
The title of Thunderbolts is not Thunderbolts Asterix, it's Thunderbolts Part 1. So, there you go.
So, if that's the case, that feels like such a huge error, right? Like a huge error?
Yeah.
Like, I can't even believe how huge an error it feels
super
like.
Super hubris.
Yeah.
That, like, makes the Eternals will return at the end seem like very chill.
They will return because they'll show up in other things. That's the thing. Like, that is always reasonable to say so-and-so will return is reasonable. They'll pop up somewhere. We're not saying there's going to be Eternals. It doesn't say continued in Eternals 2.
Yeah.
But to end Thunderbolts with, this was part one, by the way, man, that just feels like absolute hubris to me. And that feels like a potential, like a moment where you could say, oh, this is it. This is where Marvel fell off. Like, this is where they lost it. Because, like, you could do it, like, even with Avengers, they didn't call it part one and part two. They started that, and then they decided, now we'll call them different things because part one, part two is scary.
Yes.
And maybe with maybe the Dune of it all convinced them that they could do it. But I feel like Thunderbolts, I mean, maybe as we get closer, it'll be more exciting. It doesn't seem super exciting.
No. No, so it doesn't.
I don't know.
Like, I'm looking forward to it because, you know, I like Yelena. I thought she was a great character. And, you know, I'm interested to see what they do with Ghost because I thought Ghost was a really good character I'd like to see more of. But like we've said, and many other people have said, it's all just the same power. Like, it's just people with guns. Like,
spy, nothing, it's just spy people, yeah.
You know,
they which didn't is, mix it up. By the way, that's fine. Like, if you don't spy, like, if one of the premises of the Marvel Universe should be that you can do different genres.
Yes.
And if you're just going to do, like, an Elite Squad movie, that's fine. Like, here's your Elite Black Ops Squad. That's fine. I'm not against it.
But you can mix in people with different abilities, you know?
Well, I also feel like,
bring you know, the wizard.
I also feel like you don't call it Thunderbolts because I just feel like that's not what Thunderbolts is. So I don't really, but you know, I mean, other people are saying, what if it's not part one? What if it's Dark Avengers?
Sure.
Or something, you know, which is horrible.
Dark Avengers.
Yeah. I mean, like maybe that, like,
is it Secret Avengers? Is that what they were?
Well, Secret, there's two different ones. There's Secret Avengers and there's Dark Avengers. Dark Avengers is the group that Norman Osborn put together. Yeah. And then Secret Avengers is like the espionage Avengers team.
Okay.
Yeah. So either way you could go. Dark Avengers is closer to Thunderbolts in the comic, which the initial premise, which is that they're a group of villains.
Yeah. That's when Norman was running around in the Iron Man armor, right?
He was like president. Yeah. So, I mean, that, like, would be interesting, you know what I mean? Like, if it's, like, turns out that this is this big twist at the end, this is a team being run by villains, that they don't know it. The team doesn't even know it. But that's the deal. But part one sounds like a terrible fucking idea. And I think that keeping it a big secret and being cutesy about it will just piss people off.
Yes.
Frankly.
I agree.
So I hope that it means something else.
What if, in reality, the movie's only 30 minutes and it's called Thunderbolts TLDR? That's what they go.
Just like in the middle of the movie, Bucky just goes yada yada yada, and we just cut to the third act.
I died, and then they avenge me. That's it. They, goodbye. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Boy, oh boy! All right, do we have trivia?
We do.
What do we got?
Who was the man who broke the bat?
Bane.
Bane. Which character was first introduced as a villain, though the character was both hero and villain over time, but is actually personified in the creator's words as the next person who puts on the mask?
Asriel?
Grendel.
Grendel, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
What anti-hero's birth name was Francis Castiglione?
That would be the Punisher.
The Punisher.
All right, you ready to talk about the next episode of X-Men
9? Two different last names for him here.
What do they have?
They have Castiglione and Catalione. Huh. I don't know which one is right.
I've only ever heard Castiglione. I've only ever heard Castiglione, because that's why it's shortened to Castle.
There you go. That makes yeah. more sense, yeah.
All right, are you ready to talk about the next episode of X-Men 97?
Yes.
Let's do it. X-Men 97, Season 1, Episode 6, Life Death, Part 2. Surprisingly, this episode opens in deep space.
Yep.
As the Shi'ar are in a pitched battle with the Kree.
Yes.
And we're coming towards the end of the battle as Deathbird and the Imperial Guard are on the Kree flagship, and they are fighting none other than Ronan the Accuser. Great Marvel stuff here. Great Marvel stuff here. And Deathbird rules. And I want to say, you know, we get a quick shot of the Imperial Guard. Most of this episode is just Gladiator.
Yeah.
But we get a quick shot of the rest of the Guard. And in the Guard is a character named Vulcan, who is Scott Summers' secret brother.
Yeah.
So he's a newer character, so I feel like that's not accidental. I feel like that's a storyline they're probably going to come to.
Maybe.
In the comics, It turns out that Professor X wiped Scott's mind of the existence of his brother Gabriel. And this is one of the things that Scott got really mad at Professor X about. For some reason in the comics, every comic writer feels motivated to be like, what if Professor X was the worst guy who ever lived?
Well, there's two things anyone that writes the X-Men likes to do. One, what if Professor X was actually a big asshole?
Always, constantly. Always.
And two, what if Scott Summers had more family members than he knew? And they just keep adding family members to the Summers family. And it's like, why did him and his brother grow up in a fucking orphanage when they have 30 aunts and uncles? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, it's something else, man. But yeah, he's got a brother. Well, he already has a brother, Alex Havoc. But then he has Gabriel, who is the secret brother, who I believe in the comics has never amounted to much of anything, as far as I can tell. He's just not a good character, I don't think.
Yeah.
But there's drama to be mined from it in the cartoon, so I don't know what they're going to do with this. But he showed up for a quick second, as far as I can tell. But Deathbird rules, and Gladiator rules. And the fight here against Ronan is pretty fun. Ronan's like, I will bow before no one. And they're like, as if. And they just kick his ass.
Yes.
He just gets his ass handed to him.
Yep.
Which I really, really enjoyed. Did you enjoy this battle sequence?
It was all right.
Yeah.
I don't like the Shi'ar in general.
I love the Shi'ar.
They don't do it for me. Their stupid head thing. I don't like it.
I don't know if
it's hair or a hat. I don't know what they're wearing.
It's neither.
It's dumb.
It's feathers. They're bird people.
Those don't look like feathers.
They're bird people.
Yeah, I know they're bird people.
Listen, take it up with Dave Cockrum. I happen to love those head crests. They're so cool looking to me, and they're like so fun, and they're so impressionistic looking to me. I really, 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 really love them. As you mentioned in the opening, the Imperial Guard is based on the Legion of Superheroes. It's like a one-to-one matchup. With Gladiator being Superboy, because Dave Cockrum, who was doing the X-Men at the time, had just been doing a bunch of Legion backup comics.
As a matter of fact, he created Nightcrawler for the Legion.
And they didn't want it, and he brought him over to the X-Men. He actually went over back to Paul Levitz and said, hey, am I going to get sued if I put these characters in the X-Men comic? And the answer was no. And also, I wish that we had Legionnaires that looked as cool as these guys.
Yep.
Speaking of Nightcrawler, he is in the opening credits of this episode.
He is.
So he does not show up in the episode, actually. Nope. But he's taken the spot. Although,
in fairness, most of the characters in the opening credits do not show up in this episode.
Right, but
it's weird that he gets added in. And then
this one. Yeah, he's like not like at all. Like he was not a member last episode. And this episode, he's now a member, but he's not even
in. He was in the credits last episode, wasn't he?
I don't think he was.
I thought he was.
No, I don't think he was. His appearance was an exciting surprise for me last week.
Okay.
So, I mean, I love it. I'm glad to see that Kurt is joining the team because Kurt is my favorite X-Man.
Yeah.
And I mean, Kurt and Kitty are my two favorites. And unfortunately, because they have fucking Jubilee, they'll never do Kitty in a meaningful way.
Sure.
Because she basically did the Kitty stuff in the show. They
go with older, with Kate, right? Bring her in as she is now in the comics.
I guess, but I feel like that there's a point where you're creating a really complicated history for the X-Men before the cartoon began.
Yeah.
That feels weird because I think she has to have had a history with, I think she only works if they all knew her as a kid. That's the only way that she works.
Sure. You know,
so I just think Jubilee.
It'd be fun. She shows up and she's like, "Oh, I used to be just like you, Jubilee." And Jubilee's like, "How many teenage girls used to just hang out with Wolverine all the time?"
It's like it's a thing. It's a thing that he does. Yeah. Wait until you find out he's 170 years old. Talk about age gap discourse. Not only was he an old man when you were born, he was an old man when your great grandmother was born. The surrender of Ronan is interrupted by a phone call from good old Lilandra, the empress of the Shi'ar Empire. And we get a good bit here where...
Do you think during the call, Ronan just fucked off? He was like, all right, I'm out.
I would love that. Like, that's one of my favorite on the... on the police squad show at the end of every episode, they would do a freeze frame. Yeah. And one episode, they had brought a guy into the police station and then everybody did a freeze frame, but they're all still standing there. Like they're not like actually frozen. They're pretending. And then the one guy they arrested realizes that everybody else is freeze framed. Yeah, he just leaves.
Yep.
I would love if that happened here.
That's what I figure must have happened because they don't – because they stop everything to watch this fucking phone call.
It's so funny.
And they cut away and they never go back to that. I'm like, I guess Ronan just left? Like they were like, well, we got to go deal with this. I guess we'll fight you later, Ronan. Like,
who knows? So the phone call is an announcement that Lilandra is getting married. I really like the way that she announces it, where she's like, remember this guy from a year ago? Because in the old X-Men show, everybody thought that Xavier was killed, but it turns out that Lilandra actually took him out into space to heal him. And that's where he's been all this time, is out in space with her, boning down.
Getting his fuck like. On.
Yeah. Getting dominated, it sounds like.
Yes, there is a line later.
Real Chris Claremont shit, I gotta say.
Yeah, where they have a little back and forth where it's like, oh, this is a dom-sub relationship for sure.
100%. She announces that she's getting married. We see a couple of different of the client races of the Shi'ar Empire, including, I was excited to see, the horse dudes from Power Pack.
Yeah, they were all over the place.
Yeah. So that's the deal. The deal is that Lilandra and Charlie Xavier are going to be getting married. And people are like kind of weird about it. Meanwhile, Xavier, who, by the way, he comes out. She's like, I want to introduce you to my husband-to-be. And he comes out in a power suit. And they drew his face different. I'm positive they drew his face different, right? Did you notice this?
I didn't think so. I don't know.
I am positive of it. Because like when his face is visible through like the helmet a little bit, it just doesn't look like him. He's got like a weird nose and shit. I'm positive they drew
him. Well, the helmet's covering his nose and stuff.
I think, isn't it the helmet?
No, it goes down right to like his lips.
Oh, does it? I thought his nose was visible.
No, it's one of those masks that somehow fits perfectly, but doesn't bend around your nose.
Everybody was like kind of shocked when he comes out, and it's like Professor X, and they're like, that guy.
It's weird. They kind of play it as if we're supposed to be surprised, but also when we first see him, he's in his old wheelchair.
Right.
Like they don't show his face, but you see the wheelchair moving in the arm, and I'm like, well, obviously it's Professor. I mean, even if I didn't know it was like the whole Professor X Shi'ar stuff, they'd be like, well, that's Professor X. Like, I don't know why they try and hide him for a bit.
He's walking around power armor. That's the third thing that everybody who writes X-Men likes to do, which is make Professor X walk again and then either cripple him at the end of their run or have the next writer have to cripple him at the beginning of their run. Very standard situation in the X-Men comics. So they go back backstage.
I do like, by the way, that his power armor makes robot RoboCop sounds.
So good.
I was very excited by that.
They're really doing the show correctly, man. They honestly really are doing the show correctly. Like 100%, they are just doing it right. Like they get the vibe.
Yeah.
They truly get the vibe. Backstage, they have a talk, and we get a little bit of lovey-dovey shit between the two of them. And Professor X is obviously been really trying to convince Lilandra to go hang out on Earth.
Yeah, he's not very subtle.
I'm not sure what he knows. Does he know that everybody thinks he's dead? Or does he think that everybody knows he went to space? I don't know what he knows.
I don't. That's not very clear. He seems to know what's going on, and to some extent,
he has a connection to them. Yeah,
you know. So he must know that they all think he's dead.
Because the thing is that if he knows they all think he's dead, this is another classic Professor X is a huge asshole thing. Which, by the way, he did this in the comics too. So like, this is not like the showrunners doing this. No.
This is a story right from the comics. Yeah.
But it's like one of those things, like, just let everybody know you're not dead. Like, just tell your friends, like, hey, I'm okay.
Send them a postcard or something.
Yeah, like, just get on the phone for
them. Just fucking.
Like, if anybody deserves it, it's him, right? So, sure. But he's, like, kind of, like, not so subtly telling Lilandra he would love to go hang out on Earth. Maybe she can make Earth, like, her summer palace. But she doesn't like that idea very much. So she's not really all about it. And also, neither is anybody else in the Shi'ar Empire, turns out.
Yeah.
Back home, Storm is hanging out with Forge. He got bit by the adversary 2 episodes ago, and he's got this big demon infection. And the adversary keeps hanging around, yelling at her, telling her, leave this fucking guy die. He took your powers away with his inventions. You are a real dummy to be hanging out here. I did not know this, but the same actress plays Storm and the adversary.
Oh, really? That's good.
I think it's really smart. It's really, really smart. It's, I think, very, very excellent. And the adversary is really coming at her too. It's like, you're a loser, you suck, and then it makes
you
her
smell
think
bad.
It makes her think she's in a coffin. I was very intrigued by this. So the adversary puts her in a coffin, right? And we know that Storm is claustrophobic.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't say it. Now, yep, they've established it elsewhere in the other X-Men cartoon. However, yep, in real Chris Claremont fashion, she would have a two-paragraph speech.
She'd be like, when I was a child, a building fell on me, and now I'm claustrophobic. You can't put me in here.
I mean, that's, yeah, like 100%. There's not a chance that she wouldn't fucking monologue about it. No. I was very surprised that she doesn't monologue about it here. This whole episode hinges on her claustrophobia in many ways.
Yes, and they never actually say it.
They never actually say it. I thought it was very interesting. While she's in the coffin freaking out, she says, I'm not afraid of dying. And the adversary says, no, you're afraid of living. Good demon dialogue. That's, I think, yeah, very
good. Also good, like, therapist in a movie dialogue.
Well, like evil therapist, right? Dark therapy.
Well, like a therapist who, like, pushes you to your edge so that you'll, right, be better, and then is like, seize the day afterwards. And,
well, you know, do. The adversary is like, listen, here's the deal. Like, you don't have powers anymore, so just fuck it. Like, just live your life, man. Like, just give up. Like, who cares? You're not an X-Man anymore. None of this shit's your fucking problem.
You're wearing overalls.
Yeah, like, none of this shit's your problem. And then it seems like things are going pretty badly, but then Forge busts in holding a magic book and throwing Doctor Strange spells all over the place.
Yep.
I mean, explicitly Doctor Strange spells.
Yes. Yeah.
No accident. And that was a choice. And I'm curious about the choice. Because is this – I hate to do this, man, but, like, we're in the multiverse saga.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, are they trying to, like, subtly let us know, like, they're actually – this is a cartoon, but it is also connected multiversally to what's happening? No, I know that it is, but are they trying to let us know? Like, or is,
no,
it just,
I think really it's more of a thing of the Doctor Strange movies, especially the first one, have set up what magic looks like in the MCU. So you want to match it so people know right away, oh, this is magic.
Yeah, but they did magic on the old show. They could have just used magic from the old show.
But you know, this is, more people have seen the movies than
true cartoons, probably. I also feel, right, like, so, he's running around carrying a glowing book. I feel like that just tells me it's magic.
Well, I mean, 2 seconds later, he's like, the magic that my mom taught me.
I was just really intrigued. I'm not complaining about it. I think it's cool looking.
I think it's just quick. It's, you know, everybody knows, oh, that's magic. I know what that is. That's magic in the Marvel universe.
So I'm not supposed to read into this at all.
I mean, maybe, but I can see it going either way.
Okay. He banishes the adversary to the desert, and then
which Storm, is what he tried to do last episode two episodes ago when he said, "Get out of my home, you dang demon!"
You didn't have the book. Storm takes a look. This is my favorite part of the episode. She looks at him.
Home, you damn demon!
Storm looks at his wound, and basically her response is, "Jesus Christ." Oh my God. What the fuck? How are you alive? Like, he even is like, hey, listen, Doc, your bedside manner needs some work.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. He explains to her that his mother told him that for demon infection, there's a special magic cactus that grows in the nearby mountain that only grows in the dark, and that's what they need to get. And so Storm's like, I'll go get it. And he's like, no, I don't know what's going to happen to me. Like, this shit's happening pretty fast. If it takes me, I don't want to be here by myself when it happens. So she's like, we'll go together. And they ride horses to the mountain. We're off. Is it Mount Salt?
I think so.
Did you write that down?
I did not.
Back on Shi'ar, the Shi'ar homeworld Chandrila, Deathbird is like, you know what? Fuck this. I do not like – what, are you laughing at?
No, I was cleaning. I was sniffing.
Oh, boy. Look who's sniffing on the mic now.
Yeah, well, you fucking got me all worried about muting.
Oh, I can do nothing right. Back on Chandrila, Deathbird is all freaking out about this marriage. I'm going to say, so I understand, like, the arguments that she's going to make in this scene coming up. Is the whole premise of why she's against it just because she hates her sister, though? Like, is that the whole – it's just absolute hater behavior? Like, fuck you, you're not getting married? Like, is that it?
I guess. Like, I mean, I think it was in the previous scene, right? When they're in the garden, there's a good bit when Alondra's like, oh, you and your stupid mutants are so
She says, you're a hopeless whirlpool of drama. I think it's
you're a hopeless whirlpool of drama. And then he goes, your brother tried to destroy the entire universe, so maybe shut the fuck up.
It's so funny.
How about that?
It's so funny.
Yeah.
I really like that scene very much because I really do like that Lalandra is like, you fucking people are so dramatic.
Yeah.
It's so great. She's not wrong. She's not wrong no, about the X-Men.
And neither is he when he's like, we had to stop your brother from destroying all of reality, so... Why don't you calm down? And your sister is crazy too. So
well, she was helping the brother, and she wants to take over the fucking Imperium every chance she can get. Yeah. She's a straight villain. But like within the context of this bit, like I'm like, is there like a larger political move that she's making, or is it literally just like, fuck you, you don't get to get married, I hate you.
I think part of, I mean, she says at one point, you know, that like it's disgracing the bloodline to marry this ape man, right? So like I think that's part of her whole thing.
Racism, you know, just standard racism, old racism.
Yeah, she our superiority, you know, if you will.
She says, listen, he can't marry. And then Professor X, like, frankly a dummy, like says the dumbest thing he could possibly say in this moment. He's like, listen, your sister and I, we make the decisions around here, including what planet the homeworld is. And they're all like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Even the lawyer's like, what? Hey, Charles, shut the fuck up.
Like, what a crazy thing to say. Why would he even say that? It's so nuts. But you know what's funny? Like, I'm not mad about it from a writing point of view, because one of the things I like about these kinds of characters and these kinds of stories is when the main characters just do stupid shit.
Yeah.
Like, I like when they do stupid shit. I'm all about it because I do stupid shit day in and day out. Sure. So, like, I like to see myself represented in these stories.
Sure. We did miss the bit, the sub-dom bit.
Oh, right.
When they're introduced and the guy introduces them and Xavier says, your man speaks as if I was your pet, not an entirely displeasing thought. And then she says something along the lines of like, shut up, you fucking dog.
Well, she says you could bark, later. I think she says
later. Yeah.
Yeah. But like he's turned on about it.
Yeah.
Really fucking enjoy it.
Maybe that's his whole thing is he likes like what gets him going is when she's angry at him. You know, so he's I'll say that I get to decide where the planet is, like which planet is the home planet.
It's so funny.
And that's going to piss her off and that's going to make for a good night.
Yeah. Deathbird has a challenge. She's gonna this is actually another favorite part of mine. She goes, you probably don't know this rule, and he goes, I learned that rule my third day here. I read that book my third day here, which I think is just such good Professor X shit. Like, I just really like that. But she says,
so says Milky Way ghetto.
You're back in your Milky Way ghetto.
Which is a great line.
She challenges him that if he really cares about Lalandra and he really wants to fucking be Shi'ar, he's going to have to erase all his memories of Earth.
The Madasha is what it's called.
Is that what it's called?
I wrote that down because it sounded like a TikTok star. I don't know. That everyone would be like, Madasha. Like, I'd see an article on like Yahoo or in like Google Discover. It's like, Madasha's in hot water. I'd be like, who's Madasha? And then I give up 2 seconds in the article. Like, I don't care.
Professor X does not want to do this. And he is quite clearly hesitant, like to the point where all the high council is like, what's the problem, bro? Like, do it.
Yep.
He goes off and he ends up looking at a statue and he has a conversation with Gladiator where they have a discussion here that I don't understand why Xavier is living with the Shi'ar.
I have no idea.
He says, don't you people consider art and music signs of mental illness? And I was like, what the fuck? Why do you live here? It seems miserable.
Yeah.
This is as miserable a place as you could possibly be.
I would think so.
But they're talking about their ancient Shi'ar gods, and they're looking at these statues, ancient Shi'ar gods, and how they had to get married to unite the empire or something. And, you know, Gladiator says, listen, idealism is also a sign of mental illness. And Xavier's like, I had a good friend back home who felt exactly the same way. His name was Magnus. And Gladiator's like, sounds like a cool fucking dude.
Sounds like my kind of boy.
My kind of boy. And so Professor X is like, fine, I'll do it. I'll fucking erase my memory, I guess. I guess I'm going to have to do it. He goes and actually first, Where are we on my notes? Oh, okay. So then we go back to Storm and Forge. They've gone to the cave. There's a whole thing about this cave being a colonizer cave.
Yes.
There's a colonizer sub theme to this episode because Professor X is about to give the Shi'ar a big speech about colonization. Yeah. And
it's a bit that makes no sense in this conversation between Storm and Forge.
Which is what?
Is that Forge says that they turned this mountain into like a artillery depot during the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, decades before that, they had a war with my people.
Mm-hmm.
And then Storm says, yes, they eradicated your people. Why did you let them build this depot in your land? And I wanted him to be like, I just told you they did it after the war where they eradicated us. Like, it wasn't like we were like, hey, do you guys want to build a depot now that you beat us up? No, they fucking destroyed us, you
idiot.
They
pretty much genocided my people, Storm. Like, catch up. Very bad. It's a very bad period of American history, so I'm catch up with it. Yeah, that is
Xavier learned all about these Shi'ar in 2 days. You can't pick up a American history book.
Storm's lived in America for 20 years. She still doesn't know what happened with the fucking Native Americans.
What are they teaching at that Xavier school? Certainly not history. No civics.
So Storm has to go into this dark cave all by herself, and of course she is a huge scaredy cat when it comes to tight spaces, but she does it anyway. And she's climbing and she drops her flashlight and the flashlight falls into the center of the earth.
Yes.
Just never stops falling. And then the adversary shows up again and the adversary starts fucking with her in the cave. She's like climbing up this cave. She's like wedged between two walls in this tight space, trying to get this cactus. And the adversary shows up and starts fucking with her all over again, talking about how, hey, didn't she just want to be a human being? Fucking give it up. Give it up. Eventually, though, Storm realizes something, that Forge's machine did work. The problem is she has a block. So the machine actually did give her powers back, but because she has this mental block, she can't use them anymore. And in this moment, she is able to. Oh. What?
I misunderstood this whole bit. I was so annoyed.
Why? What did you think?
Because she said something along the lines of like Storm's like Forge's invention worked, but it's I who's blocking the powers. And I thought she meant like the gun because it was based on his stuff to take away mutant
powers. No, it was the tube that he put in
the tube. Yeah, yeah. That makes sense. Because I was like, what do you mean you're the block? Like, fucking Beast said it was out of your DNA. You're such a good liar to yourself that you changed your DNA.
I was confused by that.
That Forge, makes more sense. The machine that he put her in. I forgot. Yeah.
The machine put her in worked and she got her powers back, but because she's this mental block, she couldn't access them.
Yeah.
Okay, and so sense. Now the adversary has pushed her so far and she's confronted her own inner demon so directly that she's able to break through and she begins to call up powers. And I really like this show like a lot. And yeah. I've every episode except for the mojo bits of episode four, there has been something where I was like, this is the best thing this show's done. This is the best thing this show has done.
Secondary mutation.
I was fucking pumping my fist when she fucking covers herself in lightning, manifests her classic outfit
and grows hair.
This is the best shit I've ever fucking seen in my life. That's my favorite outfit of hers. I like the mohawk stuff, but this is the best. Like that headpiece and shit fucking rules. Oh,
yeah. The black suit's great.
Oh, yeah. Man, it's so good. And she's I like
her little cape wings thing that she has.
I love that. It's so cool. And she's just like, adversary, fuck you. I'm out of here. I'm taking this fucking cactus. And then she goes out and she like has why this show is cool, because it gives her like a minute to just like fly around, like fly with the horses, look at herself in the water, like really revel in having her powers back. And then she creates a fucking hurricane scene from space.
Yeah.
To like, I don't know, she kicking the adversary out into space. I mean, I'm not really 100% sure what that was about. Or she just like, she's just flexing her muscles.
I think she's like, now I'm just going to cause some natural disasters. I mean, like that.
But it was so cool. It was a shot from the point of view of a satellite. And it's just like, and here's a fucking giant 9 mile tall fucking storm cloud.
Is that the satellite's there and then like the storm cloud forms and the satellite moves in a little closer, like real quick. Like it's like, what the fuck? What is going on over there?
It just, this whole sequence rules so hard. And I think one of the problems with the MCU and with the DC stuff too, is that it does not always take the time to capture that for as challenging or whatever some of this stuff is, being superpowered rules.
Yeah.
It's cool. And this is a moment where I was like, look how cool this is. Like, look how fucking happy she is.
Yeah.
And the fact that they put her in her best costume only made it better for me. Cause I was just like, oh, I love this costume. I love this costume.
Sure.
You know, I love her punk era. Like, I'm, you know, don't get me wrong. Like, a lot of eras I like for Storm, but this is for me.
Storm is one of the people I would say has never had a bad costume as far as I can think of.
I'm sure she has. I can almost guarantee there's a couple in the 90s that are not that good.
Didn't she have the white costume in the 90s?
She had the white costume for a bunch in the 90s, not the whole way. Okay. That was the Jim Lee, I think, era, if I remember correctly. Somebody's,
I like that costume, wrong, too.
But yeah. Anyway, she goes and gets Forge and brings him back to the bed and puts the juice on him. Back up in space.
Not OJ.
Not OJ. Back up in space, they're ready for the ritual. And at the last minute, Xavier's like, nah, actually, fuck this.
Yep.
And so Deathbird's like, fuck you, you're all going to die. And we have a fight scene.
Well, this is when Deathbird sets up the idea that she doesn't like the idea of him screwing with their blood, because she says his inferior freak fluids.
Freak fluids. It's so good.
Inferior freak fluids. I want to form a punk band so I can make an album called Inferior Freak Fluids.
So good.
Inferior freak fluids.
They have a fight. I really like in this fight, Gladiator's like, whatever, I'm just going to stand in front of everybody.
Yep.
My whole thing here, I'm just going to stand in front of everybody while you shoot endlessly at me, and you can't even begin to hurt me. Yep. And he is also like, watch this. I'm going to do all of my Superman powers now.
Yes. Don't worry, I'm Superman. Yeah. You haven't figured it out yet. Yeah. What I really like is that when we're introduced to Gladiator, he's hanging out with Deathbird, right? He's doing all that stuff. And then here, the moment Elandra's like arrest her, he just jumps down and punches Deathbird. Like,
that's his job. His job is his Imperial Guard. Yeah.
I like it. I like that there's not a thing where he's like, oh, whose side am I on? He's like, nope, this is what I do.
No, Gladiator's like the last. Queen. He is the last guy to question. Like, Gladiator's pretty fucking serious. But then an amazing thing happens. Professor X goes, wait, I'm a psychic.
Yeah. Well, like, he says, I've forgotten my greatest gift.
My psychic powers.
I was really hoping he'd be like, I've forgotten my greatest gift, the gift of song. And he'd start singing.
And he puts everybody in the astral plane. And, okay, so the Storm scene was the best, but this is the second best. This is Professor X eating an apple in front of the class and being like, demerit, next time raise your hand, is so fucking magical.
Just all of them sitting in those little like wooden classroom chairs.
It's so fucking funny. And like, it's such a good character bit because it really establishes very much, you know, because earlier in the episode, Lalandra's like, you know, you're a great teacher. When we conquer the Kree, you can teach them our ways. And Professor X isn't like, that sounds horrible. Like, that's like horrible, because Professor X is a condescending guy. So like in that moment, he's like, yeah, it's kind of cool to teach a whole fucking civilization how to act. And here he's being condescending, putting them in little child chairs. Like, he could do this like in like an office setting or even like a university lecture hall.
Sure.
But no, it is fucking high school. He's in high school with these people. I love it. And then he goes on and he does this whole conversation about colonization. And it's very interesting. He talks about sort of the cycle of how a colonizer continues to cut the colonized off at their knees, how it extracts the value they want from them while holding them down. And that's what the Shi'ar do. And that's what all colonizers do. And it's very, very interesting. It's very, very good. And then I'm not like 100% sold on his solution, which is we are all stardust.
Yeah.
I'm not
a little
really
too stoner hippie-ish.
Yeah, because I don't feel like the really interesting question for me about colonization and globalization is the tension between extraction and exploitation and modification and immersion. So the idea that like is the sharing of culture's a positive, or is it robbing the original culture of something special? And that's an interesting conversation to be had. And it's cool that you could do it in an alien context, because nobody has to get up in arms about it. Which is why these kinds of stories are great, because you can talk about this stuff and not have to be, this is the wokest episode of the show, by the way. But a lot of these anti-woke people have no fucking clue, because we're talking about the Kree and the Shi'ar.
Yeah.
And
the real Curzon Dex maneuver.
Exactly. And I do wish that there had been more discussion about that. He kind of just jumps right to, but we're all stardust. We're all young. We're figuring it out. Which makes sense, because he's trying to convince the colonizers to, hey, chill out. Like, and I think that a lot of the way people talk about this stuff now is very counterproductive, where it's like, you're a privileged evil colonizer. It's like, great, I don't want to work with you. Like, you think I'm horrible. Like, wait, what's the deal here? His deal is like, hey, listen, we're young. We're figuring it out. You know, we could be better than this. And I think that's a better way of doing it. But what's really interesting to me –
Do You Realize by the Flaming Lips. Like, just listen to this and you'll get it.
Well, what's really interesting to me is I think the show agrees with me, though, because when he does that, as soon as he does that, he gets the fucking flash about the massacre in Genosha. And so the show is really undercutting his own speech with like millions dead. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's very interesting. And then there's like a giant gambit that appears over him and turns into a skeleton. And he freaks the fuck out because he feels in that moment everybody die.
Yeah.
And so I think the show is undercutting a little bit of the kumbaya, hey, we're all stardust. And I'm kind of curious what that means for Professor X when he comes home. Like, what's his attitude going to be? And it would be kind of cool if they were able to make it that Professor X and Magneto kind of swap sides.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they'll be able to do it, because I can't imagine Magneto not being super fucking militant after that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, unless he's hanging around with Zorn, in which case, who knows what they're going to do. But anyway, he wakes, everybody pops out of the astral plane. He's like, oh, I got to go home. And Landra's like, yeah, but you just were convincing everybody, like, you had it. Like, this was going to happen. Everybody was like on your side. It's like, nah, I got to go home. Like, my kids need me. Like, this shit is hard fucking core. And he decides that he has got to get the fuck out of there. And meanwhile, back at home, Forge is feeling better, and they turn on the TV. Storm calls him my love. So this is, we have now happened to really made a love connection in this storyline between these two. She turns on the TV and she sees that not only is Genosha destroyed, but many nations are refusing to let refugees in. And then that is the end, except for this one little postscript where Bolivar Trask is running down the street chased by somebody. And he's like, no, I gave you access to Master Mold already. Like, what do you want from me? And then Mr. Sinister shows up and goes, oh, we're just getting started around here. And I was a little disappointed. And that's the end of the episode.
It was weird that they seemed to be on the set of The Kingsman 2. I was very confused by that.
I was disappointed that it's Sinister behind it all.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
I don't like Sinister, A, and B, we just had Sinister, and we just had a Sinister story where Sinister got beat up by somebody coming out of stage left and just tackling him, and he goes, whoop!
Like, mid-speech,
yeah. Okay, I mean, like, yeah. Like, it was great, but, like, there's, like, something about that where I'm like, am I supposed to take Sinister seriously now?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they're going to reveal somebody else is behind Sinister, but you know, we're at the back end.
If anyone's behind him, it's Apocalypse, right? Isn't
that the whole thing? That makes sense, right? That's why I thought Apocalypse was going to be the reveal, because we haven't had Apocalypse yet.
Yeah. Unless it is Cassandra Nova, and they've been lying in interviews by saying, "Oh, we're not doing Cassandra,"
which is also possible as well. I mean, who knows what they're going to do? I at the end of the day, I trust them, but I just wish when Sinister showed up, I was like, I don't like this guy. I think he sucks in general. Like, just not a fan. Just not a fan of Sinister. I think he's never actually really worked. So, yeah. Like, in any medium, I don't think he's ever really worked. So, what'd you think of this one?
It was okay. I thought it was okay.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah, you liked it more than I did.
I like
it. I don't like the Shi'ar stuff. I've never liked the Shi'ar stuff.
So, you're out cold already from the beginning.
Yeah, I just don't find them interesting. I find the entire setup of them dull. and I they don't to for me they don't fit what I want from the X-Men. So, you know, it's the same with like the Brood and stuff. Like whenever the X-Men go off into space, I'm like, this is not what I want from the X-Men.
See, I love that stuff because for me, I get very bored very quickly of the standard X-Men stories, and I think Claremont and Cochran were pretty brilliant to introduce a sci-fi element that was just theirs, that only belonged to them. I mean, yeah. Obviously people ended up using them over time, and they've been incorporated into the larger cosmic Marvel universe. But at the time, it was just their corner where they could just do shit. You know what I mean? And I think that's great because I think that also makes them feel important. There's something about them. I think every great Marvel hero should, on some level, be able to operate on the street and in outer space. And I think that not every time, they don't have to always do it, but I think they should be able to do it. And I think there's only a handful of Marvel characters I feel like who don't belong in outer space, or when they've been in outer space, it felt too weird to make sense anymore.
Yeah.
And I think Spider-Man can do outer space, like not a lot, but a little bit. I think Spider-Man's a science fiction character. That was his earliest shit, was just straight sci-fi stories. It was like, you know, villains that like were like mutated or like had technological things. It was all just sci-fi stories, right? Sure. Daredevil can't go to space.
No.
That's crazy. Also, it's also wasted on him. He can't see it. So who cares? It's wasted on Daredevil to go to space. But I think most everybody else, though, the Punisher went to space. That's pretty fucking cool. That's like very cool, I think. Yeah. Punisher was an angel for a while. And also Frankenstein.
Punisher's done it all.
Well, I think it was a guy that shoots people. There's only so many fucking stories you could tell about it. You kind of end up getting weird eventually. But like, you know who's a great character that went to space was Venom.
Yes.
Especially Agent Venom. Like when he was
like Venom, it made sense. Like he came from space.
Yeah, but even still, like he felt streety when he was a villain, and I think that putting him back in space was fine. But I'll say that's why Spider-Man can go to space, because his villains come from space.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? X-Men. Venom.
He's got the one, right? I don't think any others.
I guess
Carnage, if we count that, but I mean, that's just symbiotes.
I don't think he's ever had significant other space villains. Do you know what I was looking at, though? I was looking at the original Electro from the 50s. And he's a big, fat, green, furry communist. In fact, I want you to look this guy up right now. His name is Ivan Kronov, Electro Ivan Kronov. You got to look at this guy. He's fucking incredible looking. He looks like kind of like Oscar the Grouch, as like if he grew up, he became a villain. He's really amazing. He fought the 50s Captain America. But he is the original first Electro, guy named Electro. I don't believe he's canon. Maybe he is. I don't know.
It's all canon. They've never undone stuff.
I guess he is canon then, yeah. Did you find him?
Hold on.
He's so good looking.
Oh yeah, look at him.
He's so good. Look how fuzzy he is. He's got the square head on top. He's got the eraser head haircut.
Is that his hair? I thought that was supposed to be like a hat.
No, I think it's his hair. I think that's the kid and play haircut, I think.
I thought he had like a Shriner hat.
Well, maybe it is a hat, because you know what? There's other pictures of him like from modern day art that he has a hat on.
Yeah.
But this version where he's just all fuzzy.
Looking at this old John Romita drawing of him, he just looks like Stephen King in Creepshow when he becomes Moss Man, except he's got a belt and a hammer and sickle on his chest.
It's so fucking good. Is he so cool looking? He's so funny. He's
great.
And he's fat. That's what I like about him.
I don't like the newer ones where he's just wearing like a green suit.
Yeah, it's stupid, right? And green suit is stupid, but like he's just like a fat guy, a fat furry guy.
Dude. Yeah,
it's
like that.
Really great.
More for that.
I don't know how I got to this Electro in this episode, but I'm glad that I showed him to you because he's so good.
I hope he shows up in the Captain America episode of X-Men 97.
I would love that. I would love that. But anyway, I love when the X-Men go to space. I like, and it has to be in, it can't be like forever. It has to be like, you know, a little bit of time, like a three-parter. It's like a perfect amount of time for the X-Men in space in the comics. Anything more than that, it gets a little bit out of hand. But, it makes me very happy. I think the Brood is great because I think that the idea of taking Alien and just putting it in the Marvel Universe is a terrific idea, which they're now doing, by the way.
Yes, which is a little confusing.
I mean, I don't know. Why would it be confusing?
I just think it's funny that it's like, we have the Brood. Well, now we have the Xenomorphs.
Now we have the Xenomorphs.
And the Brood are just the Xenomorphs, except they can also talk, right?
Well, the Brood are intelligent. They're kind of a different kind of a threat. They're obviously a ripoff of the Xeno. That's what they are.
Yeah.
Not even a question. But like the idea of like putting a Brood in Wolverine is awesome. Like that's just like an awesome fucking concept. Like this is really great. Yeah. At any rate, I like the space stuff. I like this episode. I like these episodes that are character stuff. I like, they had to take a step back after the last episode. You have to. Like when you reach that kind of crescendo, you needed the quiet thing.
Yeah, you need a
quieter breather. And I think I think that was really well done in that way. And it's going to allow us to come back next episode, probably have like sad stuff for the team.
Funeral, probably.
I'm assuming it's a funeral is going to be next episode. Yeah, because this episode ends with other characters discovering it happening. So that means that this was all happening concurrently with the episode last week.
Sure. Yeah.
So
next episode is Bright Eyes.
So it's about Planet of the Apes.
Yeah,
which Marvel also owns.
Cyclops watches Planet of the Apes. That's what the episode. That's the description of the episode.
I would love that.
Just him watching it. That would be great.
But even with the fact that you're not like super psyched about the Shi'ar and that stuff, that's like kind of leaves you cold. This show is a terrific show, isn't it?
It's well done. It's a very well done show. Yeah, it's not like I watched the episode. And I was like, this is terrible. It was just like the Shi'ar stuff just never interested me. And the Storm stuff was fine, but once again, it was like, why didn't they just do a full episode of her? Like, it's weird to have split this up. I don't know why they did that. That seems very strange.
It feels like they were afraid to do it, is what it feels like. Because they have, I believe they have a whole episode worth of material, right, between these two episodes.
I would think so, yeah.
But I suspect they were afraid to do it. They were afraid to take a whole episode away and how people were going to maybe complain or something about it.
Yeah.
I think also because they didn't have a full episode for Mojo, and I think they probably didn't really have a full episode for Professor X, and that probably didn't deserve a full episode.
Sure.
It gave them a little bit of space to play around with, too. That's a very common old X-Men kind of thing, too, by the way. They didn't used to do full breakout issues all that often.
No. You would jump
You'd back. Always be jumping back, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is, I think, one thing that's missing from comics these days is the back and forth, like, you know.
Right.
We've discussed this before. Nobody has a supporting cast anymore in a comic.
Right.
You know, where it used to be like, you know, there are issues of The Flash where half the issue is about Flash's mom trying to buy bread, you know. But it was like it was a great story because they were broke and they had no money. And it was like, oh, you know, this is interesting. You know, the scene of the neighbors and whatnot and what life is like. That was always fun. You know, or like, yeah, I mean, especially with team books, you really need that kind of stuff where it flips around to different people doing different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know.
So I really liked it. You were mediocre on it. But we'll be back again next week for the next episode of this program. If you want to hear us talk about more Marvel stuff, we're going to be recording an episode about Sam Raimi's Spider-Man for our Watchmen episode. It's going to come in the last week of April. So keep your eyes out for that. That's only available if you are a $5 or above member of the Patreon. The Patreon, of course, is www.patreon.com/cinemasangha, S-A-N-G-H-A. So $5 and above. We got a lot of episodes of that show. Those episodes tend to run 2 to 5 hours. So you're definitely getting your money's worth of the two of us fucking arguing with each other.
Yeah. I'm interested to see how long this one goes because we definitely, I think, both love the movie. So no hiding there.
I realized recently that we have not had a good argument about the material in a long time.
No.
We have a lot of arguments about like other stuff.
Yes.
But not about the material.
No.
It's kind of interesting, huh?
It is.
We're like closer together on some of this material we've been doing. I think is the deal or.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to think of what our arguments were. In the past.
A lot of our arguments in the beginning were you like, I think it's stupid. And I would go, no, it's not. And then you go, I think it is. I don't think it is. And then like, we would just like argue for 15 minutes like that.
Perhaps we got better at it.
we got better at talking. That's not good.
No.
It's not good.
We had a big argument about Batman Returns, right? Because I do not like it.
Probably. I don't recall. I don't have strong feelings about it. So I can't imagine we argued that hard. Look, I remember like in some of the early shows we did, I was like getting mad. Like I would be like, this fucking
No, where people were like, it's amazing you guys continue to record after these arguments. Like, yeah, with some of the early ones, yeah.
But now we argue about burping on the mic. That's like our like our thing. Mic burps. Great. Oh, we've ruined the show. We've taken away the magic of the show. We no longer spend 25 minutes arguing about horse shit.
we'll try with the Spider-Man. We'll figure out something.
Well, we're probably going to mostly agree on Spider-Man.
I think so. I mean, that's just a great movie. Maybe Darkman? Did we argue on? I'm sure we must have argued that. Like, I know it was the early ones. We argued a lot. I don't know why. Much more energetic.
All right. So we'll be back again next week. Also, if you join the Patreon, you can listen to our Star Wars podcast, The Bad Batch. And that's pretty exciting because next week I'm going to tell you guys all about how badly I hurt my feet at Disneyland.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you all about the blisters I earned. So maybe that'll be pretty cool. We shall see you again next time. In the meantime, may you be happy, may you be healthy, may you be safe, may you be well. But most of all, may you remain a true believer.